people think you're crazy, it's just because they don't have the courage to do what you're doing. And who cares what other people think? It's your career, your vision, it's your commission. Just a few years later, I'm still riding that roller coaster with Mr. X, and it's soaring to new heights. His real estate portfolio is worth over $250 million. And guess who sold him all that property? I did. The wild ride was worth it. I said yes to many things. Doing a reality TV show, selling a haunted brownstone, taking on listings that have been sitting on the market for ages, representing clients who have fired 15 other brokers, opening a Brooklyn office in 2 weeks so I could sell a large inventory of houses in a new market. The list goes on. And the only thing I've said no to was having a live tiger at an open house. That's just going too far. But it was that first big deal with Mr. X that showed me the true power of yes when it comes to making volume sales. I sell more because I say yes when other people would say no, and I can keep moving a client forward until that deal is done. Saying yes to every opportunity was my way of believing in myself and showing everyone I was the best, even when I wasn't. I've also learned that quickly flipping negatives into positives will help you close deals faster and more frequently. Sometimes this is as simple as asking yourself, is this negative really even a negative? For example, if I'm selling an apartment with no light, I'll push this as a positive to a client who is almost never home or only home at night. Why pay for a view you won't even see? Take the time to think about the usual objections you have in your area of sales. It's likely you'll hear the same objections over and over. How can you show clients that this isn't really a negative? How can you turn this around? Anticipating objections and immediately turning them into positives will result in you selling more. Get ready to juggle more balls and cash bigger checks. An unexpected sales weapon. Improv. If you visited my office on a random Monday morning during our team meeting, you might think you had mistakenly walked into a circus or a lunatic asylum. You might see a normal-looking guy in a nice suit say something like, "Look, it's raining Oreos again," while the woman next to him barks like a dog and the broker next to her flaps pretend wings while singing a country and western song. Don't be afraid. It's just our team improv workshop. Everyone on my team takes improv. Practicing improv is one of our secret weapons in becoming sales machines. When I started doing improv as a high school dork, I never imagined it would be so useful when I became a salesperson. Improv builds synergy and teaches your mind to constantly fire away in a positive direction. Improv is all about yes and taking that yes forward and adding on to it. No is forbidden in improv, as it should be in sales. If someone says, "Elephants give birth to pineapples," you can't say, "What? Do you really think that?" as you carefully back away from the insane person. The rule is you have to say, "Yes, and they have six legs." Nothing is wrong. Everything and anything is possible. Yes is the most essential word in any salesperson's vocabulary. Say yes to opportunities so that you have lots of balls to play with. You have to persuade clients to say yes to making purchases. You have to say yes to taking risks. And maybe most importantly, if a client were to say, "I only want to buy from the best shoe salesperson in the world, is that you?" don't hesitate to shout, "Yes, I am the best," from the top of the nearest mountain. Or just climb on a chair, you know, whatever works. When you are asked to do something new or totally foreign to you and you have no idea how to do it, say yes and trust yourself to figure out how to do it later. This automatically puts you ahead of every other salesperson who said no. I really figured out how to be a broker when I was cast on Million Dollar Listing New York. I was a very new broker when I went to an open casting call with 3,000 other agents at the Hudson Hotel in early 2010. When the casting director called me a few months later and said they liked my audition and wanted me to come back in, I didn't say, "I'll pass, I don't have much experience," even though being on a national television show would be a huge platform for sales. That would have been a loss of an amazing opportunity, one that has resulted in many balls being tossed my way. When your instant reaction to everything is no, it's like you're unleashing a little monster that eats up all of life's possibilities. Every deal is another scene. Improv requires careful listening. If your partner says, bathing in a pit of spiders is super fun, it's your job to add a witty retort, like, yes, and it's my go-to cure for a bad hangover. But if you weren't listening and you have no idea what she said, you'll miss out on an opportunity to add to that narrative, and you'll just look like an idiot. A sale is ultimately another narrative. It's a story, and if you want to control the direction the narrative goes, ideally towards closing and a nice big check, you need to listen to what your client is saying to you. You can't be a one-note salesperson. Not everyone responds to the same song, and it's your job to adjust the tune and play the right notes. You have to constantly ask yourself, what does this client need from me? And respond at their level. Ask yourself, is there something I can do right this second to make my client's life easier? Do I need to schedule appointments at a time that's more convenient for her, even if that means early mornings or late nights? Does this person need a friend? I'm not saying become their best friend in like a weird way, but is this process new to your client? Do they need more hand-holding? Does your client need to be gently prodded into action? Are they only going to make a move if they think the window of opportunity to buy what you are selling is about to slam shut? Practice listening to your clients before you talk. Take a few seconds to digest what they are saying before you respond. Think about what they are saying to you first, and be sincere when you speak. There is nothing worse than spouting a line just to fill up the silence. That doesn't help. You end up sounding like a bad actor who has memorized his lines and only speaks when he's given the right cue. Model yourself after an Academy Award winner. Great actors speak a scripted line and manage to sound like those words have never been said before. They can take a person along on an emotional journey that results in tears, fear, or laughter. No one will cry when a bad actor awkwardly blurts out in monotone voice, "Oh no, my mother, she is gone. Whatever will I do now?" I am not telling you to put on a character. You must be genuine. But don't be afraid to dig deep and elicit emotion when necessary. That's how a good salesperson makes sure he is giving a client what he needs to end the story with a big sale. 9 reasons to sign up for an improv workshop now. Footnote. If you live somewhere like the North Pole where the improv offerings are scarce, please don't give up. Force your family and friends to practice with you, or start your own group with other salespeople. Please, I'm serious. Improv can be the secret ingredient that boosts your sales to an entirely new level of awesome. And P.S., Shakespeare was an excellent roller skater. End footnote. 1. Improv opens you up so that you can make genuine connections with people. You'll feel more comfortable and secure talking to new people. 2. Improv will help you think quickly on your feet. You'll instantly be able to come up with a solution to any problem or any objection a client might have. 3. When you practice improv, your brain is always firing yes. Not making a deal, not getting to a place of yes, is no longer an option. 4. Practicing improv will quickly show you what your strengths and weaknesses are. 5. You learn to relate to your scene partner, and ultimately, every deal is just another scene. 6. Improv forces you to listen before you react. Listening to your clients and hearing what they want are key to closing sales. 7. When you get really good at improv, you can control the narrative. You can use this skill to control the direction of your deals. 8. Improv can help conquer shyness. And 9. It's hilarious. Planet Confidence, where everyone wants what you're selling. I'm all about saying yes to more balls. But a big part of turning those balls into closed sales and big commission checks is about getting clients to say yes to what you're selling. I can't tell you how many times a member of the Sirhan team has walked into my office and asked me to speak to a client because they'll feel more comfortable hearing it from me, or they'll believe it if they hear it directly from Ryan. I'm always happy to help out. I want my team to succeed and the brokers I work with to grow, but the truth is, the clients aren't accepting my word because I'm some powerful wizard. I'm not the Oz of real estate. Buyers and sellers accept what I'm saying because I speak from a place of complete confidence. My confidence assures people that when I say things like, "This is a fantastic apartment. I think you should snap it up," it's true, and they should buy it. Not next week or next month, but today. If you want a client to buy what you're selling, self-confidence needs to be oozing out of your pores. You must decide that there is no choice but to be the best salesperson that has ever existed in the history of the entire universe. Early on in my career, I bought myself a one-way ticket to Planet Confidence, and I've never looked back. Am I joking when I say I'm the best broker in the history of the entire universe? Sure, kind of. That is a ridiculous statement to make. Does it mean I don't make mistakes or don't have more to learn? Definitely not. But I do know that I'll work more and fight harder than anyone else and do absolutely everything in my power to get a deal done and make my clients happy. And in my book, that's what makes me the best. You might be the best salesperson for totally different reasons, and that's awesome. One risk at a time. Today, I can walk into a boardroom with a table as long as the Brooklyn Bridge and introduce myself as the best broker in the world. But I still remember what it feels like to be the new guy on the block. Footnote. If you're thinking, he's the best broker in the world, well, duh, he's on TV. Sure, being on TV is a big advantage. It opens lots of doors. But when I take new business meetings, I have to assure people I will do a good job despite being on TV. End footnote. My family moved a ton when I was a kid. It was never easy to have to start over at a new school, not knowing anyone at all. Meeting people as an adult is hard enough, but as a kid, it's the worst. When we first arrived in Massachusetts, my dad announced to my little brother Jack and me that it was time to go make some friends. He had a plan. We were going to walk up and down Hill Street in Topsfield, knocking on every single door to introduce ourselves. We were like, why? Looking back, it was a great idea. But at the time, my fifth grade self couldn't imagine anything more terrifying. My dad told us, what's the worst thing that can happen? Someone laughs or slams the door in our faces? Then that neighbor is crazy and we'll stay away. Or you could meet a lot of nice people and maybe even your new best friend. I was so scared that I can't really remember going to houses 1 and 2. They are a complete blur. House number 3 was different. We met the Badavis family. They were friendly and super cool, and my brother and I were like, oh my God, Dad was right! At that moment, a switch flipped in my mind. My fear turned into a game, and I wanted to win. How many doors can we knock on? How many friends can I have in my pocket by the end of the day? Sure, knocking on doors with my dad made life easier for a shy fifth grader at a new school, but the ultimate lesson was much bigger than that. I learned that taking a risk is doable. Had I not gone along with my dad's plan, I would have walked into school on the first day not knowing a single person. But because I took a risk, I'd automatically put myself in a better position to succeed. Or at the very least, I wouldn't have to sit alone in the cafeteria on the first day of school like a freak. It's the same with sales. Sure, risks can be scary. Cold calls, meeting new people, pitching new clients, mixing up your usual sales pitch. Or you can push fear aside and focus on the reward that might be waiting on the other side of the door. New clients, more deals, and bigger sales? What's the reward you want? Doubling your sales? Selling a new product? Trying out a new territory? Making enough money to pay for your kids' college or take your dream vacation? The Sirhants and the Badavis family have been lifelong friends since the day we showed up at their front door. I never could have imagined such a risk would pay off in such a good way. If there's the possibility of that big reward on the other side of the door, just knock on it. Go ahead. Take a risk. What are you waiting for? See? You're still alive! Take another one. Then do it again. A confession. Shyness sucks. I can walk into a room and tell anyone that I'm the greatest salesperson in the universe. But that doesn't mean I just tossed off my shyness like a dirty gym t-shirt. It's still something I have to work on even to this day. Last Friday, I found myself in a room full of people I didn't know. And I hated it. I was meeting Amelia at a gala for the Hellenic Initiative, a cause that's important to her. I arrived before she did and found myself in a giant room full of Greeks. They were all happily chatting in groups like they had all known each other for decades. My first instinct was to stand in the corner alone and look at my phone, or better yet, leave. But then my wife would kill me. I got a glass of champagne from the bar and started awkwardly circling the room while glancing at my phone to see if there were any exciting news stories, which there weren't. After half an hour of roaming the room like a weirdo, I finally had the courage myself to jump in the water. I didn't want to. I knew it would be cold and uncomfortable, but I forced myself to walk up to whoever was closest to me, and that was the photographer who was shooting the event. I decided to go with, "Hi, I'm Ryan," as my brilliant opener. We chatted for a few minutes, and he showed me a few pictures of his kids. Okay, I didn't sink. I survived that initial plunge and was ready to dive deeper. Then the photographer introduced me to some people he knew, and they were nice and happy to talk to me. Things got better, and I was able to tread water quite easily. And then my brother-in-law showed up. I've never been happier to see him. I didn't drown, and chances are that no one has ever died from introducing themselves to a stranger at a social event. Many years after we walked down the street knocking on doors, my family moved again, this time to Colorado. I was already in college, so I didn't have to worry about making new friends again, but my little brother was in high school. He had to start from scratch. He was nervous, as any high school kid would be, but I was excited for him. High school wasn't easy for me. Even though I had found the theater, I was never really comfortable in my own skin. I wasn't a jock, and I wasn't super smart. I was the kid who liked to recite poetry and wear loud Hawaiian shirts every single day. If I could send high school Ryan a message from future Ryan, it would be this. Ditch the shyness. Don't be afraid to take risks. You have nothing to lose. Poetry and Hawaiian shirts are awesome, and it doesn't matter that you aren't on the hockey team. Ask out any girl you want. I told all of this to my brother. He took the advice to heart and became one of the most popular kids in his high school, although he did dress better than I did. We are salespeople. That means we have to talk to people and meet people all the time. We must always be on the lookout for opportunities because anyone, anywhere, can be our next best customer. I still have to remind myself that my next big client could be that complete stranger I'm too afraid to talk to at a party, and that I should put my phone down and get out of the corner. I know that no matter what heights I hit in my career, the first move is always going to be hard to make. But I'm never going to let that stop me. So the next time you feel apprehensive about taking a risk, just remember that in the end, putting your phone in your pocket, getting out of that corner, and letting the world see how awesome you really are can take you somewhere bigger and better than you'd ever thought you'd go. And don't you want to see where your story will take you? The Serhant Way. Saying yes equals selling more. Don't be afraid to say yes, even if you're not sure what you're doing or where to start. You'd be surprised how many salespeople say no to an opportunity just because the idea of stepping into uncharted territory makes them uncomfortable. Saying yes gives you an enormous advantage over your competition, but I understand how terrifying it can be to say yes. I've said yes to many opportunities, and those that frightened me often turned out to be the most rewarding, financially and emotionally. Don't forget, you have the power to figure things out. And if someone thinks you're crazy for saying yes, even better! They don't have the courage to do what you're doing. Remember that getting to yes can mean playing by someone else's rules and learning to quickly turn negatives into positives. Keep building your confidence. An improv class can give you an edge. It's a secret sales weapon. Your confidence will build with each risk you take. Practice your craft. This entire book is about priming your mind so that you can be the best salesperson. But I've also included a few exercises. Salespeople who are better at being human sell more stuff. It's true! It wasn't a surprise that my past life as an actor helped prepare me for the world of reality television. All the auditions, plays, student films, and, of course, playing Dr. Evan Walsh made it easier for me to adapt to life with television cameras in my personal spaces, such as my car, office, bedroom, and shower. You did not need to be an actor. It doesn't matter if you were never even in a high school musical, but know that some of the crazy exercises I'm sharing in this book are similar to ones actors use. I've included them in this book because they will make you a better human. The question game. I'm sure you've already signed up for a local improv class and you're loving it and can't wait for your family and friends to come see your first show. You're the next Tina Fey. But just in case you want to practice on those nights that the improv dungeon is closed, I thought I'd leave you with an exercise. You're welcome. Asking questions, and then more questions, is an invaluable skill for a salesperson to have in her arsenal. Think about it. If someone asks you, "So, how are you feeling today?" and you reply, "I feel awesome," and you just leave it at that, you're basically signaling to them that the conversation is over, and P.S., you don't care about how they feel. That isn't exactly the kind of interaction that promotes connection and sales. To make sure you don't find yourself falling into a dead-end conversation with a customer, practice the question game. Make friends or family, or your Uber driver, do it with you. It's a simple game, but it is so hard. How to play. Set your timer for 2 minutes. Once you become a master of this game, do it for longer. Start a conversation with the other person by asking them a question. They must reply to your question with, you guessed it, another question. Continue this for the entire 2 minutes. Whoever messes up and answers a question with a statement loses the game. Chapter 3. Work for the deal. When I met Linus at an open house on East 36th Street, I thought he was kind of peculiar, possibly insane. While all the other guys were wearing suits and looked like they belonged in the corner office of a law firm, Linus was wearing a rumpled, bright purple tracksuit and his hair stuck straight up in tufts of gray and black. Though his appearance was bananas, he had an air of confidence about him, and his mannerisms, while odd, also suggested he felt at home in the $4.5 million apartment we were standing in. He wasn't talking to anyone, so I introduced myself, even though he looked like someone's crazy uncle. I complimented him on his vibrant color choices. Purple is my favorite color. We chatted about how we both like theater. I handed him my business card and figured I'd never hear from purple tracksuit guy ever again. Except he called me the next day. He said I seemed nice and knowledgeable about the market. He wanted me to show him some apartments in Manhattan. I never judge a book by its cover. Linus's cover, featuring a jarring, creepy grin topped with Einstein hair, but he was also a potential $4 to $5 million buyer. I had just listed a house in Park Slope, Brooklyn, that I loved. The detail of the restoration, the big bedrooms, the marble kitchen, all were exquisite. Linus wanted an apartment in Manhattan, and also maybe to recruit me into a freaky cult. But my gut told me that he'd love the Park Slope house as much as I did. When I told him about the house, he said, "I'm scared of houses and Brooklyn." But to his credit, he agreed to check it out. It's not often that I meet a client in Murray Hill who agrees to see a property all the way in Park Slope. But it's not often I meet a client like Linus. He showed up with a friend who wore equally bright clothing, and they followed me around asking me some very unusual questions. When shopping for brownstones, people normally ask, "How wide is it?" and "How close is it to the park?" People in New York City have a deep love of wide brownstones that are close to a park. Linus's concerns were different. He didn't care if he could fit 2 bedrooms on the north wall with legal light and air. He asked me random questions. "Wait, what street is this?" Like they had no idea where they were. Followed by, "Is this house near a bridge?" Like they might need to make a quick getaway. When they said they wanted to see the basement, I thought, right, the basement is where they will initiate their new cult members in a ceremony that probably involves drinking Kool-Aid. I led them down the narrow staircase anyway. I stood awkwardly near the furnace. my eyes scanning for anything that could be a weapon while they looked around. I was relieved when Linus said, "This is dirty and gross," and went back upstairs. As Linus was leaving, I told him to see Carrie the Musical, an amazing off-Broadway show I had just seen. Linus called 2 days later. He told me two things. One, he loved Carrie. Two, he wanted to offer the asking price for my Park Slope townhouse. I emailed him to ask him for a proof of funds to verify his assets and justify the offer to my seller. His response was, "Please Google if that's okay," in the subject line. Oh, okay. I typed his name into my search engine. Links to some very attractive clothes at places like Saks and Bloomingdale's popped up. Whoa, a purple velvet shirt? There were also pictures of Linus in all his bizarre glory, standing next to socialites and models. Sirhant, you fool! Linus's family owns the company that makes the amazing purple velvet shirts! Had I Googled Linus earlier, I would have learned that his family owned a very successful and well-known European fashion house. What if I had showed him houses based on how he looked? Linus had just moved to New York to run their U.S. operation and had never been to Brooklyn before. That's why he was asking weird questions. He was also worth, about $1 billion, and he couldn't care less what people thought about how he dressed. Linus went from being a cult leader to a personal hero. Since I sold him that property in 2012, Linus has tossed many other balls my way in the form of referrals, and he's now considered a friend. His weirdness is actually quirkiness, and it's really grown on me. And he hasn't tried to recruit me into a cult even once. When I chatted with Linus at an open house, I never imagined he'd be the source of so many referrals, or my mandate to so many plays. Amelia and I have shared important moments with him, like his baby's first birthday party. That's the amazing thing about sales. Just about anyone in the entire world is a potential client and friend. Anyone walking down the street is a big ball of possibility, whether they look like it or not. I have sold multi-million dollar apartments to people in crazy tracksuits and tiny grandmothers wearing cardigans with holes at the elbows. It's not always easy to determine who really has money to spend. So be open and respectful to everyone to avoid making a big mistake. Zero fear, how to transform people into clients. I've sold apartments to people I've met at the gym and standing in line at Starbucks. Finance guys, animal lovers, alleged criminals, doctors, hoarders, grandmothers, artists, college kids, and a family that I asked to please pass the dumplings at lunch in Shanghai. Every person on the street is a potential client. Everyone you encounter throughout your day represents a potential sale. That's awesome, right? But let's be honest, it's mainly awesome if you're the kind of person who has zero fear when it comes to talking to people. Salespeople have to find our own ways to connect with potential customers. When I started my career, I was renting and selling apartments in one of the most densely populated cities in the country, and I had no clue how to transform any of the millions of people around me into clients. I once asked a pregnant woman at Starbucks, "Are you looking for more space?" She wasn't, but she laughed. I had made a genuine connection with her. I didn't come off as some weirdo who harasses pregnant women about upgrading to bigger apartments while they're just trying to get a decaf cappuccino. I was sincere, open, and funny. I said the same thing to another pregnant woman a couple of days later, and I found her a two-bedroom. Sirhant secret number 6. People don't like being sold, but they love shopping with friends. Sales isn't about delivering a cheesy line, but about finding a sincere way to connect with people. If you want customers to spend their money with you, you must make them feel comfortable in your ability to get them what they want. People don't like being sold, but they love shopping with friends. This is a slogan my team hears from me all the time. Think about something a person has done for you, a favor, a loan. It's often not a stranger doing it for you. It's someone you have a relationship with. I meet so many people who don't build relationships or network because they want immediate gratification. Never meet someone to benefit you today. Meet people who can benefit your future. Early in my career, two Israeli guys in my office were selling a lot of real estate, and I asked them where they found clients. Unlike Ben Kennedy, they answered, the synagogue. Oh, good idea, I thought. But I'm not Jewish, and I didn't feel like going to church. However, the one thing I did do religiously was work out. I had made a deal with a local gym on the Upper East Side to pass out flyers on the street corner in exchange for free workouts. By now, I was a full-fledged, dues-paying member, and the fancy Equinox in Soho was going to be my synagogue. Soho was a market I desperately wanted to sell in, and I started meeting people the moment I put my mind to it. Need some water? My name's Ryan. Need a spot? Nice Nikes! These would be strange things to say to someone on the street, but at the gym, these were my client pickup lines, and they worked. They worked so well that I became addicted to meeting people. The first week, I picked up a $3.5 million loft and sold it in 4 days. The 6% commission I made paid for 100 years of Equinox. Literally. And these were just my afternoon clients. I was ready for more. So why not work out in the mornings, too? I joined the Trinity Boxing Club in the financial district, where mostly finance guys worked out. I hated boxing, but it was a good place for exercise and business. Right away, I met Frank from Citibank. We hit it off, and I sold his condo on Water Street before the end of the month. But I still had my evenings. My third membership was at New York Sports Club. They have 150 locations all over the city and are convenient for slipping in a quick evening workout. If I had an appointment on the Upper West Side, I'd swing by their location on West 73rd Street with the mission of coming out with a new Upper West Side friend. Between my three gym memberships, I was covering nearly every demographic of New York City during every part of the day. And bonus, I was more fit than ever. I made many connections at the gym, but I was deliberate about how I did it. I wouldn't walk up to someone on the treadmill, gesture for them to take off their headphones and say, "Hi, I'm a real estate broker. Here's my card in case you want to buy or sell an apartment." That's weird and annoying, especially if the person handing you the business card is out of breath and dripping with sweat. Sirhan's secret number 7, connection first, product second. Never start off by talking about the product. Always make a connection first. If you went on a blind date and the first words out of your mouth were, "Do you want to have sex?" things probably wouldn't go your way. You might even get a drink thrown in your face. Sales is surprisingly similar. You have to be sincere when meeting a potential customer for the first time. Give them a genuine compliment or ask a question to get a conversation started. Get a yes and a smile. Once that connection is made, you can ease into talking about your product. If you're shy or an introvert, think about approaching new customers as you would a potential new friend. At one time, your best friend was a total stranger to you. At some point, you met, made a connection, and now you know her deep, dark secrets. Like she drinks 5 pumpkin Oreo spiced gingerbread Frappuccinos every day. The point is, I went to the gym to work out, not just stand around baiting clients. People are attracted to other people with similar likes. Other realtors in New York were connected to potential clients through their religion, kids' schools, etc. I had gyms. That was my thing, and I milked it like a protein shake. What's your thing? Find your happy place and a place you feel comfortable about frequenting often where you can meet new people. I also frequented vitamin shops and a Nike store in Soho, where I wander around fantasizing about one day having a room just to display a massive sneaker collection. I roam around fellow sneaker enthusiasts and say things like, "Grape was a great color choice for those Air Jordan 1 retros you're wearing." There was a time when just the thought of talking to a stranger would have given me heart palpitations. Now it's just a simple compliment that could lead to a connection, a new client, or not. If you want to be really productive, give yourself a quota. Meet at least 3 new people every day and get their contact info. Start with just 1 if you need to, but get in the habit of making friends everywhere you go. A salesperson's network of contacts is her currency. If we equate meeting people to money, Meeting three people a day for a year is like depositing an additional $1,095 people dollars that you wouldn't otherwise have. Sirhan's secret number 8. Social currency matters. The more people you meet, the more business you'll do. It's remarkable when a simple introduction or a passing conversation turns into an unexpected sale or, even better, a long-term client. I've sold apartments to people I've met on the subway and in the bathroom. A connection can be made anywhere. Amelia and I spent our honeymoon in New Zealand, a place we'd always wanted to go. We were staying at the Lodge at Cory Cliffs, a small and gorgeous hotel located roughly 9,000 miles from our apartment in Soho. In other words, we were as far away from potential New York buyers and sellers as possible. At breakfast one day, a person walked up to me and said what I swear sounded like Care Levitator. New Zealanders speak English with a Kiwi accent. I thought this was a unique colloquialism, so I responded, Care Levitator. It turned out this was Mr. Fang von Tonnenberg and his wife Brunhilde of the Upper East Side of Manhattan. Now you already know that those are not their real names, but FYI, their real names are much, much crazier. They were fans of Million Dollar Listing New York, notably the episode in season 2 when I was selling a $20 million penthouse in Chelsea with, wait for it, a car elevator. We had a quick chat, exchanged contact information, and went on with our vacations. Fast forward a few weeks when we're all back in New York City. I send an email to remind them about our random encounter in New Zealand. Brunhilde responds and mentions their two children are about to graduate from college and they'll need a place to live. Oh, really? I make plans to show Brunhilde some apartments, and after looking at several, they settle on a $4 million two-bedroom in West Soho that will happily house both kids. This sale wouldn't have happened if I hadn't forced myself to turn away from the delicious Belgian waffle and say hello to a stranger on my honeymoon, and then engage with them. Every single encounter and connection matters. Just take a minute to think about your day. Where do you encounter other people who share a common interest? What's your happy place? Where would it feel natural for you to initiate a quick conversation? It can be anywhere. The park, coffee shop, yoga, etc. Start with something simple like, oh, are those almond cookies? I've been meaning to try those. How are they? That's all you need to do. You don't need to make plans to see a movie or agree to walk their dog while they're on vacation. Start with a simple connection and let it slowly develop into something bigger. In a million years, I could never have imagined I would meet over 100 people in a week on average. I was not born with people meeting muscles. I built them up over time. When weight training, you don't show up the first day and pick up the heaviest weight. You work with the one that's right for you, and as your body gets stronger, you increase the weight. It's the same with meeting people. Maybe you'll start off meeting one new person per day. That will get easier, and you'll add a second person, no problem, and then a third. All of this practice will soon translate into more meaningful connections and lead to more sales because people don't want to be sold. They want to go shopping with friends. The perfect balance. Who grows up dreaming about a career in sales? No one. We all have a story about why we went into sales. You might have fallen into it, like I did, just to pay rent. And then you got addicted to the limitless possibilities. You might be the most successful salesperson on your team who wants to sell even more, or you're the new guy who is struggling to get started. You might not be a salesperson at all, but want to improve your sales skills in whatever field or business you're in. Whatever your story is, and wherever you are in your career, we all have one thing in common. We want to sell more things to more people. We want as many balls in the air as possible, right? Most salespeople are either too pushy and aggressive and only focused on the sale, or they're too accommodating, robotic, and say yes to whatever the client asks. Both of these scenarios prevent deals from closing. To be an effective closer, you have to maintain a connection, but focus on the deal first. The used car salesman scenario. Consider the used car salesman. Stereotypically, he is portrayed as a fast-talking, super slick guy in a cheap polyester suit. This guy isn't listening to anything. He's not taking any time to make a connection with the client. He's all about pushing a product, regardless of whether it's what the client really wants or needs. He doesn't care if you came in for a minivan. He's going to sell you a Corvette. It's way over your budget and doesn't fit your lifestyle at all. You can't drive a stick shift, and there's not enough room in the backseat for your three kids. Two things can happen here. One, the client is scared away and doesn't buy anything. Two, the client is convinced to buy the Corvette and drives it off the lot, but soon curses the salesman's name when she grinds the gears because she doesn't know how to drive a stick shift, and little Bobby, who has no room in the back seat, is kicking her. Neither of those scenarios makes for a happy client or a repeat sale. As I started to close more deals, I saw that when I made a genuine connection with clients, I was able to show how my product fit into their lifestyles, and not vice versa. If my client loved golf, I'd point out how much fun it would be to live near the driving range at Chelsea Piers. Making that personal connection between product and client is key, and it lays the groundwork for a transaction. It's the difference between closing or losing a sale. If the car salesman had taken the time to understand the client, she'd refer all her friends to him and invite him over for a barbecue. Unfortunately, this warm and fuzzy scenario rarely happens, because most salespeople put on their sales hat, turn up the pressure, and try for the instant close. They work for the sale, and they fail. We all love big commissions and lofty deals, but sometimes directing a customer to a less expensive option is better in the long run. You don't make repeat customers by pushing them toward a product that's out of their price range. It's always better to do a smaller deal than no deal. Happy customers come back and buy more. Sirhan's secret number 9. Don't always sell the most expensive product. The tour guide scenario. While the car salesman mistakenly worked for the sale and forgot about the customer's needs, another big issue some salespeople have, especially in my business, is that they act like tour guides. This is the hallway. This is the bathroom. This is a wall. We're walking. We're walking. That's not selling. That doesn't sell anything. Is it nicer than the car salesman approach? Sure. But to sell, the mission is not to be nicer than the next guy. Real estate brokers can't just turn a key, open a door, flip on a light switch, and expect someone to make the purchase. But we say things like, I don't understand why I can't sell that apartment. I show it all the time. Oh, you do? You show apartments? Yeah, really? You turn the lights on and everything? Well, that's not selling. Let's go back to the used car scenario for a second. Replace your stereotypical toupee-wearing salesperson with a salesperson who acts like a tour guide. You get something like this. Here is a car. It has 4 doors. Seat 6. It's green. It's 2 years old. Etc., etc., etc. Are you inspired to buy that car? No matter what you sell, spouting facts and pointing to various components of a product is not going to be the thing that inspires a customer to open their wallets and buy. You must use your knowledge and expertise to connect a customer with the product that is the best fit for them. Steve Jobs said it best. People don't know what they want until you show it to them. Linus wanted an apartment in Murray Hill, but I sold him a townhouse in Park Slope. This didn't happen because I just told him where it was, when it was built, and what the square footage was. Based on what I knew about Linus, I believed it was the best choice for him and that he would love it. Closing a deal is about tapping into emotions. The sooner you can learn to take off the salesman's hat and get in tune with your client's emotions and desires, the better you'll become at working the deal. If you're not sure how to do that, remember what makes an exceptional salesperson. A salesperson who works for the deal. The Sirhan way of working the deal. Often, when someone on my team is feeling stuck and just can't move a sale forward, it's because they aren't focusing on the deal. It's incredibly easy to get caught up in the complications, drama, and emotions that go along with selling. Shifting your focus back to the deal will remind you that you have one job, to close a sale for a happy customer who will come back and buy from you for the rest of their lives. When you work for the deal, you are relentless, relentlessly positive, ready, and quick. Your work is your passion, and this is evident through every interaction you have with clients. You have empathy. Your ego will not help you close a deal, but having empathy will. Buying something is an emotional experience. Don't be afraid to put yourself in their shoes. It might be the very thing that helps you close the sale. You are patient. Be impatient for results, but always be patient with your clients. You listen. You don't just reply, you respond. Learn to let your customers talk first. Listen and carefully comprehend what they're saying before giving a thoughtful response. You bring value. You use your knowledge and expertise about your product to help connect a customer with what they want. You have respect for your customer, your product, and the process. You are honest and authentic in all your actions. You cannot sell without making a deal. Whether your client pays full price or negotiates, a deal must be made. You cannot push someone into a deal, and you can't expect them to walk right into one either. This does not mean that you're not letting them lead or make the rules. Unless you're selling to someone like Mr. X, then, you know, just go along with it. You're using the power of assurance to help them feel comfortable enough with the financial and emotional decision they're about to make. Do I guide clients toward one decision over another? Possibly. Do I push a little when someone is nervous about making a decision? Of course. When I sell someone an apartment they love, it's because I listen carefully to their wants, needs, and concerns, and I am able to assure them that they're making the right choice. I always make a point of keeping my eye on the target, and my bullseye is always a closed deal. The wow moment. One of my best sales secrets, dubbed the wow moment, was something I learned from a shoe salesman at Barney's. It was 2 years into my sales career, and my income had started shaping up. I was finally able to upgrade the Allen Edmonds my dad had bought me because they actually had holes in them. Apparently, having holes in your shoes wasn't edgy. It was stupid. I went to Barney's, an upscale department store, and told the salesperson I was looking to spend about $250, thinking that was an insane amount of money for a pair of shoes. He pointed to a pair of shiny blue shoes that had a distinctive urban elderly look, but were in my price range. Unless I wanted old man pimp shoes, I would need to cough up more money than I was planning to spend. He led me over to another display. This one had all different styles and price points mixed together. A nice simple shoe could be had for $300, but a shoe that would make people sick with envy would cost way more. I realized that designer shoes and Manhattan real estate had something in common. Can I show you something? I know you don't want to spend this much, but these are amazing. You have to try them on, the salesman said. He pulled a shoe out of a beautiful, deep purple box. Again, my favorite color. I slipped it on, and my foot instantly fell in love. Imagine if you took a baby bunny and turned it into a Prada loafer, without harming the bunny in any way whatsoever. The shoes were freakishly comfortable, and they looked awesome. I swear, I was walking taller and with more confidence instantly. The shoes were magical. So, are you on your feet a lot for your job? He asked. Yeah, man, all the time. Now, I'm justifying the price in my head. He went on about how the quality and design would help prevent knee injury. I actually started thinking, I'm so glad I came into this store today. These shoes could save me from needing a double knee replacement. He had wowed me with the quality and value of the shoes. I was soon convinced these shoes would save my career and my knees. I loved them so much, but I just couldn't afford the $800 price tag. I thanked him for wowing my socks off. No worries. I wanted you to try them because I just adore them. But how about these? He said, and handed me a $450 pair of Ferragamos. $200 over my budget, but much cheaper than the Pradas. So I felt more comfortable buying them. The extra $200 just meant I had to push myself to rent one more apartment that month. That day, I walked out of the store with new shoes and an understanding of how emotions can be used to drive a sale. Having me put on a shoe that was way out of my price range, but not pressuring me to buy it, created a big wow moment, and it achieved a couple of important things. First, my mind was blown. I couldn't believe the difference between a good shoe and an amazing shoe, and I was able to feel it for myself. This is a great technique for upselling someone if they have more to spend. You can't control how much money is in a client's bank account, but you can control how you present the product to them, and that directly impacts how they feel about it. I ended up spending more after trying on the better shoe. The wow moment also gave me a clear understanding of what products were in my price range. It helped manage my expectations. No one wants to hear, well, your budget is small and therefore the sofas in your price range really aren't that great. That's probably why you hate all of them. The wow moment is a kinder way to educate and assure a customer about their purchase. Sirhan's secret number 10. You can't negotiate with someone's wallet, but you can negotiate with their feelings. I first tried the wow moment on my client Amanda, who was looking for a rental on the west side of Manhattan and had a budget of about $3,500. When I show apartments, I like clients to see the full spectrum. Typically, I'd start with the apartments within their price range. Depending on the budget, sometimes those apartments may be described as the kind you wouldn't want your mother to see. Then I show them a more expensive option for comparison. This time, I was going to add a wow moment to the apartment hunt. I took Amanda to see a two-bedroom on 74th and West End Avenue. It was in a doorman building and had really big rooms with built-in bookcases. It was asking $3,400 per month, but it didn't have a view. She liked it, but I could tell it bothered her that there was nothing to see outside the windows. She needed a place fast, and she didn't want to lose it. Welcome to New York City. I assured her she wouldn't, but then asked if I could show her a place that would totally wow her. She said yes, and off we went. The wow apartment was a two-bedroom penthouse with a terrace and open city views for $4,250 per month. When we walked in, she almost fell over. She ran to the terrace. How much is this place? I need it in my life, she exclaimed. I told her, but before she got upset, I said, don't worry. I know that's too much for you, and who really needs a terrace? I have the same apartment one floor down for $3,850 without a terrace. Want to see it? She signed a lease that night. Factoring in a wow moment makes it easier for your client to make a decision. You're also having fun with them. Once Amanda had seen what she could get at her price point, she felt comfortable pushing her budget enough to take the better apartment, which wasn't nearly as expensive as the wow apartment. Amanda met her husband while living in that apartment. She brought him home to see the view, or so she says. I wasn't just making a deal that night. I was making a friend for life. Not too long ago, we had dinner to catch up. She was having a baby, and she wanted to talk about buying her first apartment. At one point, she got up to go to the bathroom, and I noticed her coat. I saw the tag. It was made by Linus's family. I laughed out loud and sent him a text. He responded right away. So funny, just thinking about you. I want to buy another house. The Sirhan way. Salespeople are always making connections. They are ready to talk to people in line at stores, at parties, on the street. Just about anyone in the world is a potential client. Connections must be genuine and sincere. Sales isn't about delivering a line. It's about making meaningful connections. Think of talking to new customers as just talking to new friends. A successful salesperson works for the deal. You are not a used car salesman. Used car salesmen are aggressive and pushy. They work for the sale. You are not a tour guide. Tour guides just point to things. They work for the client. Salespeople who work for the deal are relentless, have empathy, are patient, listen, bring value, and have respect. Practice your craft. A salesperson's body and voice are his tools. This all probably sounds crazy, but if you're having any issues with being open and talking to customers, you should try these exercises. If you're thinking, I don't want to do these things, I'll feel ridiculous. So what? It is ridiculous. Who cares? Especially if you become so loosened up, you sell more than the salesperson next to you. Would that be ridiculous? Or do these exercises at home when you're alone, like I do. We'll just keep it a little secret between two salespeople. Warm-ups to help you connect with customers. Your voice. Posture first. If you want your voice to convey qualities that assure customers they are making the right move, start with your posture. You'll sound best if you're standing up tall and straight. You'll also want to be relaxed. Try not to be rigid and stiff. You don't want to look like you've just been thawed out after spending several centuries frozen in a cryogenics facility. Stiff comes off as weird. Good posture means easier breathing, which means sounding better. Stretch your tongue. I'm serious. If you didn't major in theater in college, you probably haven't stood in a circle with a bunch of other students sticking out your tongue in unison. Doing this is surprisingly helpful when you want to sound clear and powerful when you speak. Stick your tongue out as far as it'll go, then point it up and point it down. Hold your tongue behind your top teeth and then push it out. Rotate your head in a circle to loosen up your neck muscles. If you had walked into my theater class, it's possible you would have seen all of us flapping our lips and blowing forcefully out of our mouths. This is also a great way to warm yourself up before speaking. To finish it all off, toss in a big yawn or two. Go for it. Tongue twisters. If you want to speak clearly and confidently, practice tongue twisters. Get used to really moving your mouth and your tongue when you talk. Enunciate. Say the following over and over. It can be surprisingly difficult, but as you practice, you'll soon see how your words come across loud and clear. Here are a few to get you started. He threw three balls. The great Greek grape growers grow great Greek grapes. Unique New York. Unique New York. Red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather. This is the sixth zebra snoozing thoroughly. Your face. There are a few things more jarring than talking to a person who does not react using facial expressions. It's unnatural and weird. Try to be aware of all those tiny facial muscles so that they can be more expressive. Practice scrunching up your face as tightly as you can. Think about scenarios that would cause you to do that. Like maybe you've accidentally eaten week-old sushi. Hold that expression for a good 10 to 15 seconds, then release. Repeat 3 times. Now stretch your face the other way by making a surprise face. Imagine the face you would make if your dog suddenly spoke to you. That would be so crazy! Hold that face 10 to 15 seconds and repeat 3 times. Nice job. Your presence. You are a sales animal. Back when my brothers used to tease me for being Crying Ryan, I'd yell back between sobs and sniffles, "I'm not Crying Ryan. I'm Ryan the Lion." The fact that I was crying hysterically did not likely give off the impression that I was much of a lion. However, this was a small but helpful reminder to myself that I was bigger and bolder than I appeared to be. Now for the weirdest advice possibly ever given in the history of books, transform yourself into an animal. If you need a boost of courage, if you need to have a bigger personality, go bananas with this. Bark like a dog. Roar like a lion. Roll around on the floor if you need to. Let every inhibition go. You have nothing to lose. At the very least, speaking to a new customer or a potential client will not seem challenging or awkward at all once you've allowed yourself to trumpet like an elephant. It's fine. Really. I won't tell anyone. Chapter 4. The Master of Follow-Up. It was April 7th, 2017, and I had sold a $17 million apartment to a client named Sebastian Locke, whom I will refer to as the International Man of Mystery. just like in those Dos Equis commercials, because he looked exactly like that guy. I showed him just 6 apartments in one afternoon. He fell in love with one at first sight and bought it on the spot. Yes! You're probably thinking, how did you make such a huge sale in just one day? Was it luck? Did you resort to trickery? Please share how you pulled off this astonishing feat! It does.